It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
It is indeed me, Matt Spiegel, here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Callers, hang on. We will get to you in just a few minutes. A lot of people want to talk about what the White Sox should trade, who the White Sox will trade, because I brought up some specific names, and Kenny Rosenthal was on Inside the Clubhouse talking about that exact thing. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But I teased this, and I want to play it for you, so hang on with me, callers, because I found it really interesting. This is Tom Hamilton, the great Cleveland Indians, now Guardians broadcaster, the radio man, just an absolute gem, who was on my podcast, the PBP Voices of Baseball, this week. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts. And I was talking with him about some of the great moments that he has had the chance to broadcast. And I like Tom, and I figure Tom is also a guy who crosses over between White Sox fans who've heard him do a lot of games and Cub fans who, of course, remember him doing games in the World Series. And one of the things we talked about were the great moments that he has seen, including the home run from Rajay Davis off Aroldis Chapman in Game 7 of the 2016 World Series.
Take me to the feelings of Rajay Davis against Aroldis Chapman, if you would. I was down the hall from you in the auxiliary press box. I had a good view of John Lester warming up for like three innings, you know? So I was going crazy seeing like, how long is Joe going to let him throw out there? Oh my God. But what did it feel like when Rajay goes deep, Tom?
I think it's the greatest moment in the history of that ballpark. Now, that park opened in 1994, and it's been the site of some incredible moments. As disappointing as it was not to win it, I'll take that moment that Rajay Davis had against Aroldis Chapman to my grave. It's the most tense-filled, drama-building at-bat that I think a World Series has had. Maybe because of how it ended.
Two outs, Guyard second. 6-4, Cubs leading the Indians. Game 7 of what has been a classic World Series between two teams that have longed for that championship more years than any other two franchises in baseball. 68 years for the Indians. 108 years for the Cubs. Now the pitch. Swung at, lined to deep left field. It is gone! You should see the celebration out of the Indians' third base dugout. Rajay Davis. A bullet. Two-run homer. Left field line, clearing the 19-foot wall. We are tied at 6.
Who in the world thought Rajay Davis would be the guy that gets a 2-run home run off Aroldis Chapman to tie the game? Chapman, you know, we're not talking that long ago, but he was unhittable. Now, obviously, he had been used a lot and maybe too much the night before in a game that the Cubs were completely in control of. But that doesn't take away from the fact he's still throwing close to 100 miles an hour. And the thing I liked about it, Matt, it was mano a mano. It was Chapman saying, you're not beating me on a hanging slider. I'm just pumping fastballs by you until this thing is over. And Rajay kept choking up a little bit more. And Rajay Davis wasn't a home run hitter. He was a speed guy. And so I think that added to it. And it was such an incredible at bat. And, you know, when you look back now and see the video, people don't realize it looked like there were as many people in the plaza area between the ballpark and the arena as there were in the ballpark.
Yeah.
And the entire place was up for grabs both ways because it almost felt like a bowl game with the amount of Cubs fans that were there. Now, a lot of those Cubs fans' kids will never go to college because their parents sold their college education down the tubes, buying two seats for $7,000 apiece to be at game seven. But they tell a story, Matt, that Burke Lakefront Airport, which is the private airport just down from the ballpark right on Lake Erie, they could not park one more private plane. The amount of people that came in from all over the country to be at game seven, primarily it seemed like Cubs fans, but a lot of Cleveland Indians fans that, you know, were no longer in Cleveland that, you know, had that kind of money. I mean, it was an incredible scene. And I just think that's what our game brings that no other sport brings, that moment. And to see guys in our dugout hurtling that, you know, protective railing and screen almost as if it was a game ender. And the despair that you saw in the Cubs and especially Chapman. But I thought that World Series was so good for the game of baseball to have those two ball clubs in it. And how else would you want a game seven but to have that kind of drama? Yep. And I thought it was great for the game. And, yeah, obviously disappointing that we didn't win. But I'll take that. If you tell me every year I get to do a game seven in the World Series, that to me, those are the most magical words that a broadcaster can utter. Game seven of the World Series. I'll sign up for that. I'll take the results whichever way they go.
That's Tom Hamilton, the voice of Cleveland since 1990. So I love our conversation. And how about this idea that the greatest moment in the history of a ballpark might come in a loss? There's something beautifully poignant about that. And it's something so very baseball because you're going to lose most of your games. And I don't just say this to White Sox fans and Cub fans right now. But you're going to lose most of your games. You're going to be out most of your at-bats. But you got to make sure you feel the good stuff. Got to, if you're riding the roller coaster, then you really got to enjoy the gleeful parts of the roller coaster and not just be left with the feeling of the terror and the scary parts and the down parts. So can that be the case? Is that possible that the greatest moment in the history of a ballpark, one of the greatest moments in the history of a franchise, comes in a loss? I kind of love that Tom is able to express it that way and feel it that way because that's the job of the play-by-play person, right? The job of the play-by-play person is to feel each moment to the maximum, no matter where it is, as a vessel for the roller coaster, as a vessel for the experience, and share that with the fan, to bring the fan in. Bring the fan in. So the fact that Tom can feel that, feel the excellence of that, while acknowledging the way that it ends, is a testament to his mindfulness and doing the job well. God, and just interesting to hear about that moment from the flip side. If you got thoughts on that, feel free to get them in. And we can continue the conversation that has been wide-ranging about the Cubs and the White Sox and so much more. Trade deadline looms. Cubs with decisions to make. The White Sox may be pushed into clarity that will allow some decisions, allow some action. by the course of this brutal weekend as they lose the first two in Oakland. Let's go to Dan in Rockford, who has been patient. Dan, you're on Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel. And callers, if you want to hop in, do it at 312-644-6767. Dan, what you got? How are you?
Hey, Matt. Love the show, as always, but I'm going to disagree with you. There's no untouchables on the White Sox. I mean, maybe Lewis Robert, but I trade Cease. And give me 2 seconds, I'll explain. Cease, to me, had a career year last year. He's not the same pitcher this year. He consistently struggles to get out of the fifth inning. It's going to be very interesting if they trade Cease and Giolito to, like, a National League East or National League West or any of those divisions, because they got really fat or off the Central. I don't think Cease is the one. But here's the thing. I don't think anybody's untradeable because this rebuild has failed. No one says it, but it has. They have 2 playoff wins. They have no playoff wins, no series wins. They showed you in April that they cannot compete with elite playoff teams. And the thing is, why would anybody be untouchable? They should have packed this truck up May 1st. That's all you had to see was the month of April. And then they say, well, we're 1 game over .500 from May to June something, so whoop-de-doo.
Say, hey, Dan, here's...
500 in the worst division in baseball.
Dan,
they're 13 games under in the worst division in baseball.
I hear you, Dan. They're bad. They're real bad, and the rebuild has failed. It absolutely has failed. But here's the problem that sometimes happens. Sometimes we as talkers, we as opinioneers, if you will, or, you know, as you're thinking about it, you're in the back of your mind is also thinking what they will and will not do. They're not going to just trade everything and tear it all back down and give a new baseball boss clearance to be terrible for 2 or 3 years and do another rebuild. Does anybody believe they're going to do that? No. And I don't know that it's advisable. But I get it. You think that they absolutely should. But the only way you do that is if you really bring in another person from the outside who then hires a bunch of people to go with him, like Andrew Friedman did in L.A. with the Dodgers, like the Cubs did with Theo and all of his people when they took him from Boston and slowly built a new staff, like Detroit just did with Scott Harris. Like, I mean, there's a million teams. That's what you do. It is the textbook to go outside the organization. But I don't believe they're going to do that. And I don't believe that Jerry is going to greenlight a second full rebuild here in his 80s. So that colors the conversation. And if you are going to be a team that's going to be trying to put stuff together on the fly and do kind of a rolling rebuild or what have you, like a reload, then you got to keep your young and cost manageable good players. You have to. I don't know that Dylan Cease is a guy who should be done after 6 innings every time. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, dude had a terrific June, never went more than 6, went 5 1/3 again yesterday, 5 1/3 twice in June. I don't know that Dylan Cease is a guy whose stuff is stuff and his arm limits him to not getting a lineup the third or even fourth time through. Some people can do it and should do it and rest your bullpen from one game so you can use them for the other people that are a little more tenuous when they get to those innings. I mean, Pedro was aggressive yesterday, taking out Dylan Cease after 87 pitches at 5 1/3. But I didn't think it was necessarily a good kind of aggressive. Did you? They got lots of problems. But Dylan Cease ain't one. Rodney on the south side on 670 The Score. Hello, Rodney.
Hey, what's up, Matt? How you doing, brother?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
All right. I want to shout out to my buddy, Ron. Happy birthday today, brother.
So this is Southside Rodney. How long have you been calling The Score? Rodney.
Man, from the beginning, I'm an original score here.
You know, I wrote you into a parody song one time.
I know, I heard a little bit. I wish I could have heard all of it and stuff, but thank you. I appreciate it.
I got to find that. It was the day the White Sox died. It was about the white flag trade, And it was, I heard Southside Rodney cry. I heard him cry the day the White Sox died. That was it. But yeah, man, I don't know if any caller's ever been written into a parody song on this radio station other than you, sir.
Oh, I mean, I feel blessed, man. Thank you. But I'm going to tell you something, man. Rick Hine and Kenny Williams should have been fired a long time ago. If any organization other than the White Sox, they'd have been gone a long time ago. I bet you if you call Stevie Wonder and ask him what's his opinion about the White Sox, and even he'll say, I can see that these guys should have been gone a long time ago. These guys, this organization, not only are they terrible on the field, but they're terrible off the field. Their scouting, their player development, everything is horrible.
Yeah, it is.
That's the bottom line. I mean, man, I mean, you can't fail in everything, but they failed in everything.
You're right, Rodney. It's terrible. And everything, the scouting has been bad, the development has been bad. The managing has been bad. The roster construction is bad. Hey, here's an example, okay? It happened earlier in the week when Aaron Bummer threw two wild pitches to Yasmani Grandal and they lost a game in Anaheim, okay? In that game, Sebby Zavala was the catcher. Then he needed to pinch hit Grandal for Zavala in the eighth inning, because he's looking for a home run in a 1-1 game to try and go ahead in that game and then close it out. So he pinch hits Grandal. Of course he does. I get it. Makes all the sense in the world. Then Grandal is your catcher. And then here's Shohei Ohtani, and you got to go to Aaron Bummer. You have to. Crochet's not there. Tanner Banks is being used in some other ways. Bummer's been pretty damn good of late. Well, I shouldn't say pretty damn good. He's been better. But he's got that nasty, nasty slider that dives into the dirt, starts low and dives lower, and lefties struggle with it. But it's Grandal who has to catch him. So he's bringing in Bummer to pitch to Ohtani, and it's understandable. But then it's Bummer and Grandal. And while Grandal is better at blocking fastballs in the dirt, blocking that Bummer slider in the dirt by Grandal is just an absolute disaster. Okay, so that's a roster construction issue, and maybe you shouldn't have paid Yasmani Grandal all that money. That looks bad, along with Dallas Keuchel. Those are the big, big money add-ons when it was winning time in this particular rebuild. And then Andrew Benintendi is an add-on this year. It's the most expensive contract in the history of the White Sox. But we're in the denouement of the window. As the window closes, is the daily soap opera that we play on the Parkins and Spiegel show, afternoons 2 to 6. So it leads to disaster in that game. And then yesterday you send down an outfielder, Adam Haseley, and they don't call up an outfielder, Oscar Colas, who homered twice in a game again in the minors. Colas is destroying AAA pitching and should be up to give you another lefty bat and an option for power. But they send Haseley down and they bring up Carlos Perez, the catcher. And nothing against Carlos Perez, who had a big hit in their sixth inning yesterday. Or was it eighth inning yesterday? Whatever it was. I think it was the eighth. Carlos Perez had a big hit. But he's up here and Grifol said so. So he doesn't end up in a situation like that where he can't pinch hit for Sebby. And he can't pinch run for Grandal, so he needs that third catcher. So now you've got a third catcher, and you don't have Colas. This is roster construction, limiting the options, and making a manager do some bad things that he's capable of doing on his own, capable of being bad on his own. So yeah, it's a multi-level problem, as Rodney pointed out. We'll hear Kenny Rosenthal from inside the clubhouse talking about the White Sox front office and what the shakeup may or may not look like. In a moment, when we come back, we'll continue to take your phone calls as well. Here on Hit and Run on 670.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Yesterday, they had a guy starting for the A's who had an ERA of close to 7, right? He was 0-6 in 7 starts this season. He gets the win. Today, they call up a guy from AAA who had an ERA of 6 in AAA in his starts in the majors. He had an ERA of 8, and he went toe-to-toe with Dylan Cease. I mean, I've got a million of these things. The Sox should never have lost this game. I'm glad they scored 6 runs. They should have scored 6 runs. It took them to rally late. Tim Anderson almost hit a grand slam, which would have been amazing. The fact that we're talking about them losing twice to the A's, that's, I know it's a Major League Baseball team, it's pathetic.
It is barely a Major League Baseball team. In fact, there was a moment when the A's ran off the surprise. What did they win, like 6 in a row?
Yeah, 6 or 7 in a row.
About 3 weeks ago. And they beat the Brewers. And after one of those games against the Brewers, I think it was Corbin Burns said, you know, people forget they're a Major League team. And I haven't been able to lose that quote every time I think about it. Imagine being on the A's and hearing an opposing player say, you know, people forget they're a Major League team. That's the level of afterthought and condescension that just comes and goes for the Oakland A's as a competitive franchise right now. And nobody really bats an eye until they beat your team, the White Sox, 2 games in a row with a chance to sweep. And I believe that Dan Bernstein might owe his showmates a dinner at Gene and Giorgetti if Oakland wins today. He said that he would take them to dinner. So if that's the case, I kind of, for Ray and for Adam Studzinski, especially those two, I mean, and Lawrence, but I bet Lawrence has been there before. I don't know if those guys have been there before. They deserve an excellent dinner on Dan Bernstein. So go Oakland today.
I agree. And Tony Kemposter's got to come with them.
Tony Kemposter. Well, it can't stay up here. So it's got to go somewhere.
It's got to go.
Yeah. It would go in my dorm room. I'll tell you that. Tony Kemp legging out a triple yesterday. You know why? Because every ball hit to the outfield gap against the White Sox is officially now a triple. It just is.
Those are the rules. We don't make them. It's just what they are.
6 triples in the last 5 games have the White Sox allowed. 6 triples!
What a stupid stat.
Two triples in 2 different games. It's outrageous. Their outfield positioning is horrific. Go Oakland today. Kenny Rosenthal talking about the murky mess that is the White Sox front office and what kind of changes could be made this offseason and what Jerry Reinsdorf might want to do about it. This is yesterday on The Score.
Do you see the White Sox organizationally making big moves?
Tough question, because based on performance, you would think the answer is yes. But Jerry Reinsdorf, one of his great qualities is his loyalty. And I know some people would say, well, it's not such a great quality when you're keeping people who aren't doing their jobs as well as they could be. But if you work for the guy, you'd want loyalty. So because of that, I don't know if he will make a change in the front office with Rick Hahn, Ken Williams, whoever it might be. It's difficult to say. And I will say what you said, Mike, there is accurate in my view. When they made these trades, the Sale trade, the Quintana trade, everyone thought they were getting the right guy. And they did get the right guy. But sometimes it just doesn't work. Players don't always develop the way you would anticipate. All kinds of things happen, and this is why they're where they are.
Oh, that's the grim, circular nature of White Sox disappointment from Kenny Rosenthal.
Ow! Ow!
Yeah.
Ow!
I mean, that's, you know, just keep taking it. Keep taking it to the noggin the way that John Sterling did a few weeks back. Stan is in Bellwood on the Score. Good morning, Stan. How are you?
Good morning to you, Speaks. How are you, my man?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Show as you. There's two things, Speaks. I got that, or my own great baseball moment that can occur in a loss. But I couldn't wait to get you on the line here because I wanted to be among the first to welcome you to reality. Okay. I can't believe it took you until July 2nd to realize that the White Sox are a bad team. But you finally got here, yeah. So you deserve a hug and a pat on the back for that.
I need a hug today. Yeah. It's pouring like crazy and the teams are bad.
Ain't that the truth? Well, mm-hmm. All it took was believing your own eyes. Because if you, you know, had been believing what you saw all this time, you wouldn't be surprised that the White Sox could be swept by the Oakland A's. I wrote them off and their season back when they were 9-22. Hmm. There was no coming back from that. And I just wish that, you know, people would stop this nonsense that the White Sox are in it, quote unquote, because they play in the American League Central. They're not in anything except for deep doo-doo. It's not going to happen. Everybody, practically everybody on that roster should be on the table. I think they have a core of about four or five players that, you know, to keep and build around. You know, Cease, Luis Robert, Vaughn and Eloy, and just build around that team, blow it up, and start over. I mean, even Lance Hendricks, once he's 100% healthy, you know, shouldn't be an untouchable, because an elite closer on a bad team is a luxury. Yeah, he's not going to help you much. So, you know, I wouldn't consider him an untouchable either, but it's not going to happen with this bunch. The window closed a long time ago. Just, you know, forget about it. Hmm. But the single greatest pitching performance fees in baseball history, Harvey Haddix's 12th perfect inning.
Yes.
Occurred in a loss. They finally got to him in the 13th inning. The Braves did and beat him. So, you know, great moments can occur in a loss. I mean, I consider it the greatest pitching performance ever, because it will never happen again. 12 perfect innings. It will never happen again. And, you know, people forget about that because they lost the game. But it's the greatest pitching performance ever simply because it'll never happen again.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's fun. That's fun. I can't tell you a specific moment from the Harvey Haddix game, but I love that his name just got mentioned. This is the kind of stuff that makes me want to wake up in the morning, people. Jim Rice trivia questions impromptu to Chris Kampka in the 9 o'clock hour. A Harvey Haddix mention from Stan in Bellwood in the 10 o'clock hour. I sang the lyric that included Southside Rodney to Southside Rodney this morning on the Score. What the hell? This is why I wake up. It's absolutely it. Also, I wake up to talk to Ben in Queens on Hit and Run. Good morning, Ben.
Spiegs, I am your hug. I am your hug. I'm here to hug you. I want to get first to my great moment in a loss, National League Championship Series 2003. I know everybody's going to think about the Kerry Wood homer, but yes. I go back to game one, bottom of the ninth, one on, down 8-6. Sammy Sosa goes yard, and they tie it up. And I'm thinking, this is it. We're going to sweep the Marlins. We're going to go up against the Red Sox. or the Yankees, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. Didn't happen, but I thought that was a great moment.
Wow.
So anyway, before I get to my hug, just a moment, item of business, the Parkin and Spiegel bets. There's no leaderboard up yet, so I'm wondering if there's going to be any movement on that anytime soon. You can give me your answer on that later.
I'm trying. I'm trying and efforting. Our friend who built the site is a very busy, busy human. That is for sure. But go ahead.
We're all busy. I understand. Okay, I talked to you 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, the Cubs were 9 games under .500. Okay, they have gone 10-6 since then. They beat the San Francisco Giants, who are in a 17-7 stretch. They beat them the series at home. They have gone from 11th in everything to 9th in runs, 9th in slugging, 10th in average, of course, 5th in on-base percentage, because that's what they do. They get on. The pitching is good. 2nd in average, 5th in whip, 4th in ERA. I'm talking the National League here. Mm-hmm. A sub-4 ERA. Now, if you look at the WAR leaders, the top 30 WAR leaders in the National League, according to Fangraphs, the Cubs have 4 players on that list. They got Swanson, they got Steele, they got Stroh, and they got Nico. The only teams on that list that have 4 players are Atlanta, the Dodgers, and Arizona with 5. The Cubs need to stay the course. Speaks, Fangraphs says that the Milwaukee Brewers are going to win the division with 83.7 wins. So 84 wins the division. That means the Cubs need to go 46-35 in the second half. That'll get them to 84 wins. 43-38 gets them to about .500, which is what I've been saying all year long. I'm going to be at the stadium next Saturday. I fully expect them to be within striking range of .500 and within 3 games of the division. Love you, Speaks. This is my hug. And please let me know, was it a symphony you missed, or what was the Tchaikovsky? Was it the,
It was the Chicago Symphony Orchestra playing at Millennium Park in the Pritzker Pavilion, doing Tchaikovsky's 5th Symphony, which I'm told is an absolute beast of a symphony to play, as conducted by Riccardo Muti here in his final season. That was Tuesday night, but the air quality was so horrific that I went home instead of walking literally across the street to meet my family and join a friend and his family to picnic and watch the symphony. And I hate the Canadian wildfires and global warming and my own decision, frankly. Because it sounded like a lovely opportunity, and I've missed it. We will work on the website and getting that up. That was a pretty good positivity hug there from Ben in Queens. Pretty good positivity hug. And he thinks the Cubs will be within 3 games when he goes to see the Cubs at Yankee Stadium. Coming up next weekend, this series against Milwaukee, this is a big one. And it is indeed a big one. Win today first. Today's game has been moved to 4:00 because it became obvious early this morning that heavy rain was going to fall pretty much until 3 p.m. So Cubs pregame at 3:30. Let's squeeze in one more call before a break. This is Owen in Willowbrook on 670 The Score. Owen, thanks for calling Hit and Run. How are you?
Oh, good, Spiggs. Hey, lifetime White Sox fan up until about 2 years, 3 years ago.
Uh-oh.
And even before then, it was kind of doubtful. but one of the things that really amazes me is how when the Sox go into Oakland, and they say, oh, this becomes their easy part of the schedule. I think teams look at the White Sox and say, they're the easy part of our schedule. And I'll tell you, I mean, how you can ever think about, you know, putting these guys in charge of making the trades to make the team better? Yeah. You can't. And it really goes back to me when Chris Sale was pissed that he knew that this management was not worried about winning. And I'll tell you, this guy Han, he really doesn't know talent. You can say, oh, this guy's physically good, but I don't think they look at mental aspect of people when they look at trying to go after talent, because you got guys that are coming up to the ballpark, they're swinging even before they get to the ballpark.
Yeah, Owen, thanks for the call. Scouting is a very difficult thing, and I remember, like, you know, it used to be that it was like, well, dude, we just got to get boots on the ground and look at the players. And then it was, well, we've got analytics and we've got numbers. And then it was,
You know, we really need to think about them as people and if they're what kind of learners they are and can they develop. And then it was back to the boots on the ground. And then it's like, well, what about the swing plane? Let's look at their swing plane. And then it was, well, what about the neural feedback of their brain function? We can do some testing like that. And then it was, well, we still got to get boots on the ground. You know what it is now? It's everything. It's such a difficult world because it's everything. Dan Kantrovitz was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday just talking about the Cubs preparing for the draft, talking about the state of modern scouting. It's everything. It's a melting pot. That's what he said. It was a good quote because that's what it is. You got to consider everything, and it takes an incredibly detailed mind. It takes a really well-heeled group of people, a big staff, all working on all the stuff and weighing the right aspects the best they can, and in the end, probably trusting your gut. It's why character was in Carmine. And if I don't have to explain that to you, then you know exactly where I'm coming from. Character is also in Ivy. It is. It's a component. It has to be. What kind of learner is somebody? What kind of worker is somebody? What kind of teammate is somebody? All of that absolutely matters. You got Dan Kantrovitz from yesterday talking about the melting pot that is scouting.
Yeah, one big melting pot's a great way to frame it. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, one constant in this process is the human element, whether that's recognizing that it, you know, the players that we're evaluating are human beings, or whether it's the, you know, weighing the value of our scouts' opinions and just sort of the eyes on the ground at these players. And you know, I think something that's changed over time and probably will continue to change is the data component and, you know, the technology and the things that we're able to measure. But I think at the end of the day, if you just had to pick one data point or one part of that melting pot that you want to hang your hat on to make a pick, I think that, in my opinion, it would certainly be the scouting look, the scouting eval. And that's why we spent so much time and effort and at times money throughout the year traveling around the country and evaluating these players and trying to get to know them and try to figure out what makes them tick and try to just get to know them better than the other teams. That's our goal.
Love that. So you need everything. And even if you have a giant department of data analysts and a giant department of computer specialists, you still very much have to use scouts. Several hundred scouts in most departments in the big leagues. Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Do you guys know what Sabre is? Are you familiar with Sabre? It's an amazing organization, and they publish many books, and they have a convention upcoming. So let's talk about the greatest five-tool player in the history of the sport while also getting up to speed on what Sabre's doing these days. We'll do that next. Rob Bradford on a good division at the top of the hour. It's Hit and Run until noon on The Score.
There's a long drive way back in center field. Way back. It is. Willie Mays just brought this crowd to its feet with a catch, which must have been an optical illusion to a lot of people.
That's your most famous catch, maybe the most famous catch in baseball history, because it was in
man,
the World
that
Series.
Wasn't my famous catch.
No, most famous. I didn't say best. Man. I didn't say best. I said most famous.
Oh, you correct yourself. Yeah. Okay, I just want to know. Okay. Okay, all right. Okay, I just want to correct you.
Willie Mays gave this crowd of 52,751 an unforgettable sight. Wirtz pounds the next pitch over Willie Mays' head. But there goes Willie. And he makes a miraculous catch as he stops a step short of the wall.
Say hey, fellas, what's your name?
Say who?
Say Willie. Say hey.
Say who?
Swinging at the plate. Say hey.
Say who?
Say Willie. That giant.
Hey, it is great. It's Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, here with you on 670 The Score. That's Willie Mays talking to Bob Costas in there, refuting the idea that that was his best catch, most famous catch, he knows. And as Willie had said many times, you know what he was more proud of on that play? The throw he made. He turned around and made the throw back on the Vic Wirtz catch.
He said he was his own cutoff man.
Yeah, doubled somebody up because he was the greatest five-tool player in the history of the game. There's a new book out about Willie Mays called Five Tools, and isn't that appropriate? And to talk about that and to talk about SABRE, the Society for American Baseball Research, we welcome in Bill Perch to the show, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. I'm honored to provide a distraction from the Cubs and Sox action right now.
Yes. Let's not think about the Cubs and Sox at the moment. We'll be back to them before long. Let's not think about the rain that is hammering us. Let's think about the greatest baseball player of all time, according to many, including my father, who said so as recently as Father's Day a couple weeks ago. My dad saw him play with the Trenton Giants in the minor leagues, Bill, and has talked about Willie Mays forever. But I love that Five Tools is the name of the book, because he's still and perhaps forever the standard for that player who can hit for power, can run, field, and throw, isn't he?
Absolutely, because one of the questions that I'm always asked, and I always hate to make a decision on that, but who's the greatest baseball player of all time? And you have perfect alternatives. You know, is it Aaron? Is it Clemente? Is it Mays? And I always default to Mays, to Willie Mays, because he really did it all. He may not have hit 700 home runs and passed Babe like Aaron did, but he did it all. He could hit. He was the defense. He could throw. He was just a fantastic player.
What are some of your favorite factoids or numbers, if you will, about Willie doing everything? Because to me, it's crazy. Like, he had 50 homers in a season twice. You don't think of him as a power guy, but he was. I mean, 660 homers is not 700, but that's pretty damn good. There's a million things that will show you how unique his game overall was and still stands the test of time.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, numbers in general, you know, lifetime 301 average, the 660 home runs, you know, 24 all-star teams, 12 gold gloves. I mean, I think those are the numbers right there. But the one topic that I always think about, and somebody had mentioned it a number of years ago, if the move from New York to San Francisco might have slowed up his power. You know, Aaron had the fortune of moving from Milwaukee to Atlanta, where he was able to continue to hit home runs. Maybe the move to the West Coast actually held Mays back a touch.
There's a great nugget in the introduction about how Willie used to brag about he almost threw for the cycle in one game. Against the Dodgers in 66, he threw behind Don Drysdale as a base runner to double him off of first. He threw another guy out at home, threw another guy out at third, and almost threw a guy out at second, but his second baseman dropped the ball and later apologized for it. That's the stuff. Like, who's ever heard of anything like that?
Oh, exactly. I mean, unique player, dynamic player, changes of the game. And, you know, and I'm glad you actually mentioned this book, because I want to just shine a little bit of light on SABRE. And we'll talk about the SABRE convention coming up this week. But the SABRE publication program, every year, SABRE publishes 10 to 12 different books on a wide range of topics. And as you mentioned, the most current one is on Willie Mays, called Five Tools. And every one of these books is put together exclusively by SABRE members. And this particular book was a combined effort of 51 different members, from researching to writing to vetting, fact-checking, all of the research that went into it and proofreading. And it's a completely monumental effort. And this particular book, it capitalizes on 20 different essays that really discuss his time in the Negro Leagues, his time in the minors, obviously all of the fantastic moments he had as a player, but as well as on top of the essays, getting into the relationship, say, with Leo Durocher, but how he continued to influence the game and really taking on Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds under his wing and really shaping the game long after he played. And it's a fascinating book. It's and definitely, if you're a Sabre member, you can get it digitally for free.
So there it is. So yeah, the book has tons of essays by different writers and Sabre members, including I'd see Mark Simon is in there and several others. And then there are more essays and write-ups about specific games to kind of document Willie's excellence. And it's very, very cool. Five Tools is the book. And then you mentioned being a Sabre member. The Society for American Baseball Research, founded a long time ago, but more popular than ever. Tell us about Sabre, the mission of Sabre, if anybody doesn't know.
Sure. Well, there's the idea that Sabre is all analytics. And I have to admit, I should have been a Sabre member years and years and years ago. But I waited until 2016, which I think something monumental happened with the Cubs that year. Mm-hmm. So that's what kind of pushed me over the edge. But with Sabre, it's a much more comprehensive baseball experience. So I always tell everybody, think about the unique way that you like baseball. Do you just root for a specific team? Are you into analytics? Are you interested in history? No matter how you appreciate the game, there is a space for you in the organization. And this is a perfect time this week, July 5th through the 9th, Sabre's annual convention, Sabre 51, is going to be at the Palmer House. And we are going to have panel discussion sessions, posters on basically every individual way that you can engage with baseball and appreciate the game.
So a bunch of different speakers and different gatherings. I know there's an awards ceremony as well, and it's all at the Palmer House, which is a slamming place to hang out because, of course, it housed baseball teams for decades as a big time hotel in Chicago as well, and one that has lasted forever. So people can go to sabre.org, sabr.org, and join and check out some of the publications. And if you join, as you mentioned, you get the books for free, right, Bill?
Exactly. Mm. And even non-members can buy the books at a small fee in the grand scheme of things. And if you're a member, if you want a hard copy, you can get it at a reduced rate as well. So, and please do go visit the Sabre website. We can still take on single day registrations. And if you want to catch the Cardinals and White Sox on Friday, that's our Sabre game this year. And you mentioned some of the speakers. We have Mike Vec talking about his family legacy. Jason Benetti is going to be the keynote speaker at the lunch on Saturday. Nancy Faust is going to play during the welcome reception. And if you're familiar with Jacob Pomrenke, he's going to lead off everything with a downtown walking tour of Chicago's significant baseball site. So it's going to be a week that you will remember forever.
That is awesome. Dig so many of those people, and it's so cool. I'll see you over there, Bill.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Bill Perch. And check out sabre.org to see what's going on with Sabre 51, which is upcoming. Very, very cool. The community of baseball is vast and ever expanding. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Let's check in with a really good division, shall we? And we'll talk about the trade deadline upcoming. Lots more to come, including hearing from Nico Hoerner before we get out of here at noon on 670 The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Run until noon on the score.
There's a long drive.
That's your most famous catch, maybe the most famous catch in baseball history, because it was in the World
Series.
That wasn't
my famous catch.
No, most famous. I didn't say best.
Man.
I didn't say best. I said most famous.
Oh, you correct yourself. Yeah. Okay, I just want to know. Okay. Okay, all right. Okay, I just want to correct you.
Willie Mays gave this crowd a 52,751 an unforgettable sight. Wirtz pounds the next pitch over Willie Mays' head, but there goes Willie. And he makes a miraculous catch as he stops a step short of the wall.
Say hey, fellas, what's your name?
Say who?
Say Willie. Say hey.
Say who?
Swinging at the plate. Say hey.
Say who?
Say Willie.
That giant.
Hey, it is great. It's Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, here with you on 670 The Score. That's Willie Mays talking to Bob Costas in there, refuting the idea that that was his best catch, most famous catch, he knows. And as Willie had said many times, you know what he was more proud of on that play? The throw he made. He turned around and made the throw back on the Vic Wirtz catch.
He said he was his own cutoff man.
Yeah, doubled somebody up because he was the greatest five-tool player in the history of the game. There's a new book out about Willie Mays called Five Tools, and isn't that appropriate? And to talk about that and to talk about SABR, the Society for American Baseball Research, we welcome in Bill Perch to the show, who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. I'm honored to provide a distraction from the Cubs and Sox action right now.
Yes, so. Yes. Let's not think about the Cubs and Sox at the moment. We'll be back to them before long. Let's not think about the rain that is hammering us. Let's think about the greatest baseball player of all time, according to many, including my father, who said so as recently as Father's Day a couple weeks ago. My dad saw him play with the Trenton Giants in the minor leagues, Bill, and has talked about Willie Mays forever. But I love that Five Tools is the name of the book, because he's still and perhaps forever the standard for that player who can hit for power, can run, field, and throw, isn't he?
Absolutely. Because one of the questions that I'm always asked, and I always hate to make a decision on that, but who's the greatest baseball player of all time? And you have perfect alternatives. You know, is it Aaron? Is it Clemente? Is it Mays? And I always default to Mays, to Willie Mays, because he really did it all. He may not have hit 700 home runs and passed Babe like Aaron did, but he did it all. He could hit. He was the defense. He could throw. He was just a fantastic player.
What are some of your favorite factoids or numbers, if you will, about Willie doing everything? Because to me, it's crazy. Like, he had 50 homers in a season twice. You don't think of him as a power guy, but he was. I mean, 660 homers is not 700, but that's pretty damn good. There's a million things that will show you how unique his game overall was and still stands the test of time.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, numbers in general, you know, lifetime 301 average, the 660 home runs, you know, 24 all-star teams, 12 gold gloves. I mean, I think those are the numbers right there. But the one topic that I always think about, and somebody had mentioned it a number of years ago, if the move from New York to San Francisco might have slowed up his power. You know, Aaron had the fortune of moving from Milwaukee to Atlanta, where he was able to continue to hit home runs. Maybe the move to the West Coast actually held Mays back a touch.
There's a great nugget in the introduction about how Willie used to brag about he almost threw for the cycle in one game. Against the Dodgers in 66, he threw behind Don Drysdale as a base runner to double him off of first. He threw another guy out at home, threw another guy out at third, and almost threw a guy out at second, but his second baseman dropped the ball and later apologized for it. That's the stuff. Who's ever heard of anything like that?
Oh, exactly. I mean, unique player, dynamic player, changes of the game. And, you know, and I'm glad you actually mentioned this book, because I want to just shine a little bit of light on Sabre. And we'll talk about the Sabre convention coming up this week. But the Sabre publication program, every year, Sabre publishes 10 to 12 different books on a wide range of topics. And as you mentioned, the most current one is on Willie Mays, called Five Tools. And every one of these books is put together exclusively by Sabre members. And this particular book was a combined effort of 51 different members, from researching to writing to vetting, fact-checking, all of the research that went into it and proofreading. And it's a completely monumental effort. And this particular book, It capitalizes on 20 different essays that really discuss his time in the Negro Leagues, his time in the minors, obviously all of the fantastic moments he had as a player, but as well as, on top of the essays, getting into the relationship, say, with Leo DeRocher, but how he continued to influence the game and really taking on, Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds under his wing and really shaping the game long after he played. And it's a fascinating book. It's and definitely, if you're a Sabre member, you can get it digitally for free.
So there it is. So yeah, the book has tons of essays by different writers and Sabre members, including, I'd see Mark Simon is in there and several others. And then there are more essays and write-ups about specific games to kind of document Willie's excellence. And it's very, very cool. Five Tools is the book. And then you mentioned being a Sabre member. The Society for American Baseball Research, founded a long time ago, but more popular than ever. Tell us about Sabre, the mission of Sabre, if anybody doesn't know.
Sure. Well, there's the idea that Sabre is all analytics. And I have to admit, I should have been a Sabre member years and years and years ago. But I waited until 2016, which I think something monumental happened with the Cubs that year. Mm-hmm. So that's what kind of pushed me over the edge. But with Sabre, it's a much more comprehensive baseball experience. So I always tell everybody, think about the unique way that you like baseball. Do you just root for a specific team? Are you into analytics? Are you interested in history? No matter how you appreciate the game, there is a space for you in the organization. And this is a perfect time this week, July 5th through the 9th, Sabre's annual convention, Sabre 51, is going to be at the Palmer House. And we are going to have panel discussions, sessions, posters on basically every individual way that you can engage with baseball and appreciate the game.
So a bunch of different speakers and different gatherings. I know there's an awards ceremony as well, and it's all at the Palmer House, which is a slamming place to hang out because, of course, it housed baseball teams for decades as a big-time hotel in Chicago as well, and one that has lasted forever. So people can go to sabre.org, S-A-B-R.org, and join and check out some of the publications. And if you join, as you mentioned, you get the books for free. Right, Bill?
Exactly. Mm. And even non-members can buy the books at a small fee in the grand scheme of things. And if you're a member, if you want a hard copy, you can get it at a reduced rate as well. So, and please do go visit the Sabre website. We can still take on single day registrations. And if you want to catch the Cardinals and White Sox on Friday, that's our Sabre game this year. And you mentioned some of the speakers. We have Mike Vec talking about his family legacy. Jason Benetti is going to be the speaker, the keynote speaker at the lunch on Saturday. Nancy Faust is going to play during the welcome reception. And if you're familiar with Jacob Pomrenke, he's going to lead off everything with a downtown walking tour of Chicago's significant baseball site. So it's going to be a week that you will remember forever.
That is awesome. Dig so many of those people, and it's so cool. I'll see you over there, Bill.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much. That's Bill Perch. And check out Sabre.org to see what's going on with Sabre 51, which is upcoming. Very, very cool. The community of baseball is vast and ever expanding. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Let's check in with a really good division, shall we? And we'll talk about the trade deadline upcoming. Lots more to come, including hearing from Nico Horner before we get out of here at noon on 670 The Score.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.